I'm the one that's crying, not you, Dave. I'm crying. Do you know what I mean? And so you're so self-absorbed that you don't even realize what's happening straight in front of you.
Welcome to the Safety Podcast with your host, all the way from a small green island in the wild Atlantic Ocean, Richard Collins.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Safety Podcast. The voice you just heard at the start of the show was that of Lisa Ramos, who is today's guest. If you don't know Lisa, Lisa was involved in a serious workplace accident back in 2006. Both Lisa and her husband Dave now travel around the UK to tell the story about the ripple effect of physical, mental and emotional impact that the incident has had on their extended family. As you'll find out throughout the podcast, Lisa is an incredibly strong and honest person, and I'm really humbled to have someone like her on the podcast and to have taken the time to come and share her point of view with us. She now spends her life along with Dave trying to help other people, and I hope you can take as much value from this conversation as I did. So let's join our conversation with Lisa, and I'll catch you on the other side. Hey Lisa, what's going on? Welcome to the Safety Podcast. How's things with you?
Yeah, really good. It's, I'm not joking. I am so exhausted. It's unbelievable. But I think this week has been the best week since we started doing it.
There's been, oh, really?
Yeah, honestly, it's literally, I think I'm becoming like Beyonce, safety world. You know,
awesome. Because, you know, how do you mean?
Well, literally, on Monday we went to Bailey's and it was so funny because Bill O'Neill, who's in charge there, he none of the staff knew that me and Dave were coming. And so how we'd done it was just absolutely fantastic. What he'd done was he'd played my video. I knew it was being set up in the warehouse and then he got a massive aisle. The staff didn't know we were coming. They played the video, and just as it was ending, Dave wheeled me in from the back. I mean, I've got goosebumps now. It was just absolutely the atmosphere. It was a mixture of happiness, but then they were shocked at the same time. We did a speech yesterday, and I was chatting to this guy at the hotel, and so I was, you know, just chatting, what was he here for? And he said, I'm here to see you. And I was like, what? Me and Dave just looked at each other. Because it's literally like, that's just madness. Do you know what I mean? That people, they're not there to see you because they were there anyway. They've come specifically to see what me and Dave have got to say. And it's just, I think the thing is, what people don't understand is when you become disabled, it's so shocking how you are treated. You know, I will ask a question. They won't even acknowledge me. They will respond to Dave. And so to go from that, which still happens now, to doing something that is so worthwhile that I can be proud of myself, because I'm doing this, I've not got any, obviously Dave is part of our team, but I'm not just tagging along, if you get what I mean. So for me, it's just absolutely fantastic that I can actually do something and be proud of, you know, so, because that is one of the difficult things, because it's not only strangers who treat you like that, sometimes it's your family as well. Yeah, and they don't realise it, because obviously they just want to do something to help you because you've gone through this thing, and they don't really realise that sometimes offering to take you to the toilet or offering to push your wheelchair can make you feel humiliated.
You think it sort of elevated your own self-esteem a lot through doing what you've done then?
Unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable. I always say the last, where I had my accident, that job was was the best job I'd ever had, because there was that, you know, the people as well, you know, and it was good fun, and I loved the job, the responsibilities and stuff. But doing this is on the same par, is on the same par for me. And obviously that is odd because I'd, you know, that was where I had my accident and stuff, but I have to separate that. I have to separate that event from...
Is that... That was going back to where you had the accident? Is that
yeah.
Okay, sorry, I didn't realise.
Yeah, I have to separate it. That's how I have to do it. I have to separate that event from the previous few years because otherwise I'm one of these where I don't like it when people rewrite history. And so for me, if I pretended that I hated working there and it was awful, and this, that, and the other, that would be a lie. So I separate the two. I separate when I work...
What happened after from what happened before?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I separate the two. And that way I can still have fantastic memories because I love working there. I was going to carry on working there. I wanted to progress with that company. I wanted promotion, you know. And so for me, had the accident not happened, I probably would still be working there.
That's really powerful, and I'm sure it was really emotionally charged for you having to go back, you know, back there and in that environment then. And how did you feel about that yourself?
It was, we'd already been into Eras because when we went on Monday, the guy there was just so respectful because he was saying, you know, I think it'd be really good to do it in the warehouse for me. If we could, when we go to companies, if we could do it in the warehouse every time, I'd do it in the warehouse, 100%, because there's no activity, but you've got around you racking, you've got forklifts parked up, you know, you've got machinery and different things going on, and that's their environment. You know, if you then take that and you're in a classroom situation, it's not quite the same, you know. So for me, but the first time I went into a warehouse, it was really weird. We'd already been into a warehouse because we went to have a look at this factory where they make these safety barriers. And the thing was, because that was such a positive experience for me, because as soon as I walked in, I was like, wow, this product could have saved me had my company had it. It was a positive experience. What was really strange for me, we went and did a speech for another company and I had to wear safety boots. And so I put the safety boots on and my, you know, like in the stomach, anxiety in my stomach. And I was like really, really confused because I was like, I don't understand why I'm like feeling anxious. And then I realised that was the first time. It was weird because it was like, well, the last time I wore safety boots, I got 2 feet. Do you know what I mean? And so it was really weird. And then what I did was I went out and bought myself some safety boots because I thought, I'm not having that where I'm scared of putting a pair of boots on because, to be quite honest, when I first started working in a warehouse and I had to wear safety boots, to me, every woman on the planet should have a pair of safety boots because they are the most comfortable shoes I've ever owned. And I love wearing them. So, you know, I thought I'll buy my own safety boots. So it was weird for me. I don't mind going into a warehouse and doing the speeches.
Yeah, it's interesting that you're saying that the context of delivering in that type of, you know, atmosphere or area would really add a lot of value to what the message you're trying to get across, I guess.
It's because obviously when you're saying things and especially at the end, what happens at the end is people will ask you questions and stuff. And so you can bring up the fact that, you know, has a new procedure been brought in? You know, is there any blind spots? And they can look around and they can see, well, yeah, there's an issue over there. You know, because what I like to say to people is change, you know, when you're reporting things or not reporting things, let's change the message. You're not grassing anybody up. What you're doing is highlighting an issue. You're highlighting an issue. And then another colleague may highlight the same issue and then the health and safety person can look in that area and think, right, yeah, we need to do something about that. You know, rather than everybody having the same mentality that, oh, well, we don't need to report that, or, you know, they must know that there's a problem there. You know, so when you're actually in that environment, they can be looking, you know, they can be looking around and thinking, right, really, I should say something about, because it's just got to the point now where it's no one's responsibility, but the designated health and safety person. That's what it seems like.
I think a lot of people in the profession can relate to that, absolutely, and actually I had a conversation with a lot of people on this very same subject not that long ago. If you don't mind, just backtracking a wee bit, Lisa, we've obviously got into an interesting conversation in your recent experience, which is really timely to hear that you've been able to go back to where your accident happened, and you know, you had such a powerful response, and you're starting to see the reactions of people. And obviously what you're trying to do is have that impact in sharing your experience, which is obviously very emotive for you. And, you know, there's so much for you to talk about, and you've been emotionally impacted and personally impacted. To give people a bit of just a brief background on your story and how you became, you know, someone who goes to workplaces and shares your story, can you give us a quick sort of overview of that?
Yeah, so basically, myself and my husband work for the same company. I work within the warehouse, and the only difference between, say, myself and another colleague was that they'd got their forklift license and I hadn't. So I was based within that warehouse. I wasn't an administrative assistant or anything like that. I was a team member, the same as everybody else. And so what happened was, I was walking from one office to another department within the warehouse, and I didn't realise that a forklift was inside of a container. We'd finished for the day, so there was no more activity within that area. There was no more loads to be loaded on the container and stuff. So I've walked past, not realising he's in there. And when he's come out, he's not realised that I was there. And so what the shocking thing is that he said he knew he'd run something over, but he thought it was a roll of tape. So this is how big and powerful a forklift is. Yet they give the impression, they give the impression that, I'm not going to say they're a toy, you know, but you don't really see them as a dangerous thing. The problem is with a forklift is that it's the wheels on them, you know, they grip you. And so with my injuries, my leg being amputated isn't the long-term problem. It's the fact that obviously he's reversed over me, ripped everything one way, and then obviously for him to get off me, he had to go forward, so he's ripped it all the other way. And so I've got a lot of nerve damage, and that is something that I will have forever, and obviously I have to take a lot of medication for that. So it's not actually losing the leg that causes you the issues. But the other thing is as well is that even I thought after the amputation, my mentality was, mine's an accident, nothing else is going to go wrong. That's what I believed. And I think because people will go on about how positive I am and this, that and the other. When you're going to the amputee centre and you have got people around you who've got cancer or diabetic, where you see them one week and they've got one leg missing, and then you see them a few months later and they've got both legs missing, you thank your lucky stars, because you know mine's an accident, nothing else is going to go wrong. And at the end of it, hopefully, touch wood, when I get my compensation, I can live in a bungalow. Whereas these other people, they just have to make do. And so I think that that's where that came from. I didn't realise that I would still have issues down the line, because I've now got to have further surgery, you know. But I was very, very, very lucky, very lucky. And I had the best counselling the money could buy, and had a lot of counselling.
It's been a very long personal journey for you, and it was a while before you came to the decision, or it developed into a notion that you would come and share your story with workplaces and people. Can you tell us a bit about how that sort of developed and how it came about?
Well, it was quite funny, really, because when my company was prosecuted at Crown Court, I was interviewed for the news. And so somebody from the Forklift Truck Association saw that and had made contact with me. And so what would happen is they do Safetember. So come September, I would do local interviews and things like that to try and highlight how many forklift accidents there are. But then what would happen is I would then go into a depression, because for the rest of the year, you're getting on with your life. And so I found I became very, very low. And so 2-3 years ago, when they came to me and said, we'd like you to actually do a speech at the conference, I thought to myself, I can't do it. I can't keep doing this to myself, being okay, moving on, and then dragging it all back up again. But then when I thought about it, I thought, why did I take those photos of my injuries? Why did I do that? Do you know what I mean? I wanted to make a difference. I wanted people to realise the damage that a forklift can do. And so, you know, I was really excited. I was gonna do this speech. I was nervous as well. And I'd recently passed my driving test. And so I'm saying to Dave and my mum, oh, you know, I'm going to go and do this speech. And their reaction actually made me quite angry, because they were like, oh, well, you can't possibly go by yourself. And it wound me up. So I thought, I'm not in a coma. I've just passed some tests. I can drive there. And so I felt silly when I rang the 40 people up to say, do you mind if Dave comes with me? And they were like, obviously, they were like, well, yeah, of course he can. And then I thought, I'm going to teach you a lesson, Dave, for saying, you know, that you didn't think I could go by myself. And so I just said to them, well, shall we make Dave do a speech as well then? And obviously they were like, yeah, that's really good, because that's the other side of it. And so that's the very first one we did. As far as we was concerned, that was the only one we were going to do. And then we had conversations with a guy called John Knowles, who's been a massive support to us from day one. And he was saying, you know, you should do this. And I was just thinking, oh, I don't know whether I'm capable. I don't, you know. And so to start with, when I do the speech, I would cry. And the thing is, I hardly cry at all now. But what is so funny, we did one for a company. We did it a slightly different style. We do a scripted style, which is the usual one, and then we do like an interview style. And I was asked a question. When I answered it, this big noise came out my mouth, you know, like you're really going to cry. And I was so shocked, I started laughing, because I thought, what's happening to me? But then everybody was like, you know, really thinking, oh my God, she's really going to cry her eyes out. And it's one of them where sometimes I get shocked by my own reaction, because I think that I'm over that particular issue, if you get what I mean. I mean,
yeah.
We've recently updated it, because to me, I never want it to be a lie. I never want it to be, oh, but I'm okay now. And so recently updated it and included, because I put a lot of weight. And so I wanted to include that and the impact that that has, you know, the fact that if I'm not careful, I'm going to get to the point where I can't wear my false leg at all, you know. And so when I was reading it to Dave, I couldn't even speak. I was crying that much because it was the first time that I'd acknowledged that I've really got to do something, not just about wearing my leg though, you know, because the thing is, if I'm not careful, I could unknowingly bring on diabetes, and I would never ever want to go down that road, you know. And so, you know, some things can be raw, but then once you've spoke about it, you know, and you've got it out your system, and I've acknowledged that, you know, I need to do something about it and be more healthy and things like that, I was fine. But like I say, sometimes when you say something, it's like, oh God, I'm going to start crying, and you don't even realise that it still affects you.
Feels like you're continuing to document your own sort of journey and delivering your, you know, your speeches and presentations is a way of sharing that and helping yourself sort of deal with it in a way.
No, 100%. Because somebody said to us the other day about, is it upsetting? No. This is me and Dave getting free counselling, because, you know, when I had the cognitive behavioural therapy, I had to write down everything that I could remember, and then I would have to read it repeatedly, and it's to desensitise yourself, you know. And so it's so therapeutic, you know. We don't leave a company and go home and cry. We leave a company and go home. That's it. Do you know what I mean? And so, but we will forever be updating it. We will forever be updating it, because obviously new things, you know, new things come along and things like that. Our main issue is we speak a lot about our son Kieran and the impact that it had on him. Now, if you asked him if it had an impact on him, he would say no. He would literally say no. But that's not how me and Dave see it at all, you know. And so that's the constant thing, the ongoing thing. There's that, and obviously, what's going to happen once I have this next operation? Is it going to make a difference? Am I still going to be on all the tablets that I'm on? Because at the moment, I haven't drove for about 4 months because my tablets have been increased. And even though people probably, you know, when I go and do speeches and stuff, probably don't notice that I'm on a lot of medication, I would never get behind a car wheel. No way. You know, I know in myself, I'm not quite 100% with my concentration.
Yeah.
You know, and so I would never do that. And obviously that's frustrating then, because you're going back into the position where people are having to do things for you. I mean, it sounds so stupid, but when I passed my driving test, I hadn't got a wheelchair, I'd got crutches, and I was so happy that I went to the pound shop. And then when I got in there, I thought, I haven't thought this through, because how can I hold a basket when I've got crutches? And then I thought, even if I asked a worker to help me, I'm going to get the bag to the car. But I was just so happy. I mean, I'm not joking. I once went round Ho Bargains. I got my crutches. I put the crutches in the trolley and I hopped round. Do you know what I mean? And it was just like, people must have thought, what is even happening here? But I was just so happy that I'd done that myself. And so I'm really hoping this next operation, they will do what they can, and then I can reduce my tablets back to where I'm just taking them at night before I go to bed, rather than throughout the day.
I think your attitude is really something to be truly admired, and you know, it's clear that you're a very strong person mentally, and I know you've had a lot of ups and downs since this has happened to you, and you know you share that with your presentation, which you shared with me, Lisa. I can only just, as I say, admire sort of your courage and the way you deal with these things. And I think it doesn't need me to say that it's just, you know, very powerful for you to continue sharing your story as it, you know, as it develops. And each time you do your presentation, you're sharing something new that's happening in your life that wouldn't be happening had the accident not have occurred. The way you're doing it is,
as you say, healing for yourself, but it's also very impactful for those that are listening to it. How do people generally in the workforces receive this type of message when companies bring someone like yourself in?
It is the we've only had one part negativity, and I think probably that person didn't want to attend the session, but for the most part it's positive. I do feel a bit disappointed when we do these sessions. If I'm trying to get the message across where I'm saying to them, right, your bosses are telling you we want you to work safely. Why aren't you doing it? The bosses should be there. The bosses should be there. So when I'm saying these things, the bosses are there and the staff can see that, yeah, he's 100% behind it. Because the problem is that we talk about culture and behaviour. But the more I think about it, it's like, well, what about the culture and the behaviour of management? You know, health. And, yeah. It's okay the health and safety person coming down and saying, hang on a minute, you're not doing that safely. But then you've got your manager saying, I'm really sorry, but Bob and Jason are off sick. We're not going to give you any extra staff. And obviously, you've still got 10 loads to do. How do these people expect you to do that and not cut corners? So the problem is it's mixed messages.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Let's say, for example, within a company, the health and safety person had authority over the manager, maybe things would be a bit different. Or whether when there's meetings, you've got the health and safety, you've got the management, you've got human resources, and even the union. You know, because at the end of the day, if you've got a union rep, when he's at work, is he looking at people working unsafely? Is he speaking up and saying anything? I mean, me and Dave had a discussion earlier where we was on about the fact that, you know, we would have, so for example, a driver would come in that doesn't work for our company. A driver would come in wearing shorts and flip-flops. Now, what should have happened, I would give him a rollicking, tell him to get back in the cab. What should have happened, that should have been escalated to the top and his company should have been contacted and something should have been done about it. Because what happens is I could moan about something or put a complaint into my manager. He could then go to human resources and say there's a problem here. And if they're not listening to him, he's not going to bother bringing anything up. You know? And that's the problem. So there's lots of different issues, you know, rather than just looking at the people on the shop floor and saying, well, we can't quite understand why they aren't working safely when that we are telling them that's our number one priority. But they've got other people saying, well, we've got deadlines and we've got this. I mean, me and Dave was on about the supermarkets. You know, you could work for a logistic company and you're delivering stock to a supermarket and they will say you'll get fined if it's not here by this time. They don't know the process of that. So you could have it be snowing, be a traffic jam, be an accident or whatever. They don't realize the pressure that they're actually putting on the people that aren't even working for their company.
Yeah, it's that old chestnut of finding the balance between business needs and people's safety, obviously, that keeps coming up again and again. It is difficult. It is difficult for sure.
The other thing is as well is that we are relying too much on other people. You know, we rely on the health and safety person because there's a designated department. That's it. It's safe. And at the end of the day, I would be walking next to my mate. He'd be driving his forklift. I'd be walking alongside him with paperwork. I would never dream of doing that. I wouldn't walk in the road next to a car, you know, next to a car chatting. You know, and it's just madness that you go into the workplace and so quickly you fall into these bad habits and you don't see the danger.
Yeah, I think it's still a massive issue, and we've raised it in previous podcasts about and conversations with other people in the profession, you know, of that silo of a department that's meant to look after health and safety, and that it shouldn't exist. And even at one stage I was mentioning on social media about, you know, maybe we should just take the department away, which obviously from, you know, an HSE professional's point of view, it's a little bit sort of self-defeatist, or, you know, it's not what they want to hear, but everybody needs to be responsible. So how otherwise should it be done?
We need to go back to the old ways where we are responsible for ourselves and we are responsible for others. We still need health and safety professionals to guide us. And the thing is, at the end of the day, if we now see something, we're highlighting that, you know, if something like this happened to you, but the thing is, at the end of the day, you've got people going to prison now, you know, because, you know, someone's been hurt or died. And this isn't just directors. This is normal workers, you know. So if that's not enough of an incentive, you know, an incentive.
You mentioned there a few things, Lisa, that were really important, I think, talking about consistent messaging, which is one thing that, you know, is endemic in companies, that they say one thing and do another. So it's practicing what you preach. And another thing is complacency of, you know, getting used to doing something and just accepting something that's, you know, high risk as what you normally do, and not getting caught in that as well.
We had so many accidents, not with people, but I think the mentality, you know, if you damage stock or something like that, it's no big deal. But you think, well, that could have, you don't put two and two together and think, well, that could actually be a person. You don't see it like that. So we did have so many incidences, and when I look back, you think, wow, there were some really bad ones. But because it never actually involved somebody getting hurt, you spoke about it for the day, while I was on shift, like, oh, I can't believe he did that, or this, that, and the other. And then the next day, it was forgotten about. Yeah, but it's quite good, because when you go into a company, you can see something that they're doing that's really, really effective, and then you can tell another company. Do you know what I mean? So, like, we've actually know a couple of companies now who actually have forklift teams, where they will have somebody maybe on each shift who will speak up for the forklift drivers, who will come up and say, right, well, what can we do to make your job easier and safer? And then they will think, oh, well, hang on, I could do with having bigger mirrors or whatever. And so rather than it being an us and them mentality, they're actually, you know, consulting with the staff. And the thing is then you will have the other people going to the forklift team going, oh, well, what do you think about this then? Do you think they'll let us have, you know, sometimes it's the most simplest thing to a problem. For example, we went to a company where the forklift driver, he finished the morning shift, came in an hour before he finished, and he'd been on the night shift all night by himself. And so he's obviously there all alone. He's not looking at his watch thinking, oh, well, hang on a minute, a load of people are going to come in. And so just by changing his shift so that he finished just before they came in made a big difference.
I agree. It's definitely something that we can become very complacent on. And I think you mentioned there the consultative approach in terms of actually, you know, and I think that's where health and safety or HSE professionals can be effective in terms of making that bridge between perhaps management, where relationships maybe broken down between senior management and the people on the shop floor. Someone needs to be there to encourage the managers to listen to the staff again and seek their advice on how things can be improved. I think that's a really important part of our roles.
It is. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, I would speak up at work, But when I look back, going into the boss's office, effing and blinding, whinging and moaning isn't exactly the best way to go about things. You know, they then think, oh, don't worry, it's just Lisa going off on one. Do you know what I mean? Whereas if I would have gone into the office and said, look, can I have a meeting with you? You know, can we sit down and work out my workload? Rather than going in, whinging and moaning, oh, why should I do everything? They're not doing nothing. This, and then flouncing off again. What's that? That's not anything, you know. And so, you know, I try to say to people, look, if you brought something up and they're not listening to you,
the way you approach it,
try and change the way you're saying it. Because if 100% you believe that something's unsafe or that there's a better way to do it, try and communicate it in a different way.
Do you find that whenever you're doing these presentations, Lisa, that you do get senior management buy-in and people from, you know, the upper end of the organisations coming in and being involved, or do you struggle?
Yeah, we have had so much support where we've had it where high up people have then been fighting for us to go to other sites. Yeah, that to us, obviously we love going to different companies, this, that and the other. But when we get asked back, that does make us feel good, because obviously at the end of the day, we can't share any of this with our friends or family. I can't be saying to my mum, oh, brilliant, I'm going to go here and do this, because for her, as good as it is that I'm doing that, I shouldn't be doing it because it shouldn't have happened. So it does make you feel good when you get called back to a company, because that's kind of reinforcing that you are doing a good job. Do you know what I mean? Because it's nice to have positive feedback. And what we have now recently found is that when Dave talks about what he was going through, we've had it now, two separate companies, where someone has hung around at the end and spoke up and said that they're not coping because of things that's going on at home. And the thing is that these people, yeah, and so these people could be working on a forklift and they've got someone really ill at home, they've got all the financial strain on them, they're worried about this person, they're caring about them, they're not getting enough sleep, you know. And so I was so proud that they came forward, because there is that stigma that, you know, when you're a man, you know, you can handle it, and they're not going to speak up, and you feel, you know, how can you moan if you've got someone ill at home? It's very, very difficult. And so one particular company, they said they was going to do something about it, because even just saying it out loud, you know, and being able to talk to somebody, because there's no way that Dave could have ever said to anybody, I'm not coping, I'm struggling, this is too much for me, because can you imagine how my family would have reacted to that?
It must be really reassuring for you, Lisa, to see people coming forward when they otherwise may have not had the confidence to do so, just because of what you're doing, yourself and Dave. And as you said, the weight on his shoulders throughout this whole process must have been huge. And just, he is presenting with you now. Is that something that you've done from the very beginning, or was it something that developed over time?
Originally, it was just me and Dave as an option. And then I said to Dave, we need to do it together, because they need to hear both sides of it. You know, that with Dave's story, I never knew any of this until 2 years ago at that forklift event. I never knew anything that went on behind closed doors. Kieran told me that when Dave thought he was asleep, you could hear him crying downstairs. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And when that's happening to you, I was unaware of any of that, because it's happening to me. So I'm the one that's crying, not you, Dave. I'm crying. Do you know what I mean? And so you're so self-absorbed that you don't even realise what's happening straight in front of you, and that this person is so devastated because all this has happened, because it's happened to you. You can't see that the changes and the impact that it's had on those around you.
Being able to see both your perspectives in this is what makes your, you know, presentation so valuable, I think. And it's not very often we get such an insight into the impact, whether that be physical, mental, emotional, of an event like this. And I think that's what makes it so important.
Yeah, I don't think people realise, because the thing is, at the end of the day, whether it's fake or you genuinely feel like that, when you are around other people, so if I was going, you know, to someone's house for a chat, or I was going to a party, I'm not going to sit there in the corner crying because my leg's missing. I'm going to be having a laugh with my mates. And so, unfortunately, a happy picture is painted. And so when you go home and then you've got your down moment, because your family and friends need you to be strong, you haven't got anybody to talk to. So, you know, so a lot of my stuff, I would either take it out on Dave, or I would discuss it with Dave, and then he's got my stuff and his stuff going on, and he's got no one to talk to about it, because who's going to tell? Who's going to say to my mum, I can't cope with Lisa? You know, and stuff like that. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. And so I actually feel it's so weird, because I'm still actively involved with amputees, and so, but my mentality has changed completely. I'm on the carer's side, you know. And then whenever I say things like that, Dave looks at me as if to say, "Are you actually joking?" You know, because I'll be saying to the partner, saying, I'm telling you now, from day one, remember, it's the leg missing, not their arms. Don't be doing everything for them. They can do stuff for themselves, this, that and the other. And it's funny, because I'll feel Dave's eyes boring into the back of my head. And then I'll look at him, and he's like, are you actually for real? You make me do everything. I say, but Dave, that's not because I'm disabled. That's because I'm lazy. There's a difference. And I know the difference. And that's all that matters. Do you know what I mean? Because the thing is, at the end of the day, the pressures that it puts on that person. We've heard stories along the way where someone's been injured. They've had a year off work. They've rehabilitated. And in that process, that person's partner, because of the stress, the pressure and everything, turned to drink and is still an alcoholic to this day. Whereas they recovered and were able to go back to work. You know, I don't think people realise how odd it is caring for somebody.
I have to say, you know, I hand on heart admire you and Dave for what you are doing and coming out and sharing your experiences with us. It's hugely valuable for the profession and for businesses and people in general.
We genuinely love doing it. We genuinely do love doing it. It's so weird because Dave was a bit hesitant at the start. It was basically me pressurising him, saying, you need to do this as well, Dave. You know, and the thing is, Dave's message is so valuable as well, because you know, when you hear the two sides where, you know, I'm speaking about how angry and volatile I am, you can then picture that other side of it where this person is trying to do their best and their best isn't good enough. Do you know what I mean? And it's not really about Dave not doing his best. It's the fact that he hasn't been able to do it exactly how I would do it, and I can't do it.
Absolutely. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today. It's been great to have an informal chat with you, and I'm sure, you know, the people listening will find listening to you hugely valuable. Where's the best place for people to connect with you and check out what you're doing? And if anyone wants to chat with you, where's the best place to go?
Well, obviously, I'm on LinkedIn, but I'm also part of Proud to Be Safe with Jason Anker. You know, so we're on his website.
No worries. Well, if they request to connect with you, should be cool. And I'll put the Proud to Be Safe website on the show notes for you, so people can find out where that is and find out more about what you do. So again, it's a privilege to have had you on the show, and hopefully we'll see you again in the future, and some of our listeners will reach out to you for some help.
Lovely. That's brilliant. It's lovely talking to you.
You too, Lisa. Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay then. Bye.
Well, folks, that was the discussion with the formidable Lisa Ramos. What an inspirational person. I think there were some poignant moments in that discussion. And I think, as well as that, there were some useful reminders for any of us that are managing teams of people in the workplace, whether that be to do with the communication problems or, you know, how to communicate and changing your style, looking at the complacency around risk and how that creeps into our everyday activities. And as well as that, the importance of holding each other accountable. If you think any of this stuff relates to your workplace or what you're doing, please, we encourage you to share this podcast with your teams, with your workplace. Let them listen to it, and hopefully they'll get some value from it too. As ever, please feel free to join the conversation with us on LinkedIn. We'll be posting a couple of comments about this particular podcast. You can also now connect with me, dare I say it, on Instagram at Safety Podcast. That's Safety with an I, Safety Podcast. I'm going to try to share some of the story behind the Safety Project and some of the behind-the-scenes work. One of the things we're doing at the moment is building a new studio for recording in. So that's a bit of fun. We're going to share the grind of making these podcasts. It would be really cool for me to connect with some of you over on that platform and give us encouragement for what we're doing. If you haven't already subscribed to this podcast, please do so you don't miss out on future content on whichever platform you're listening to, whether that be iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, etc., etc. Also, if you've had even the tiniest little bit of value from some of the free material that I produced along with my collaborators, it would mean the world to me if you could take a minute to rate and review this podcast on the platform that you use. That's it for me, folks, on this episode of the Safety Podcast. We'll be back again soon with some really useful health, safety, and environment content. Until then, keep pushing things forward, keep aiming to have positive impact, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Safety Podcast. We would love you to tell us which episode you would like to hear. Don't forget to give us a shout at safetypodcast.com.